Hey everyone, this is Chris here. Just a little thing we wanted to add in that we forgot to mention, even though it was written down in the podcast. Recently we were at BonesCon, so we just wanted to say big thanks to all the guys who helped out on the desk, who organised the rabble that was us trying to get our stamps and books missing and all that kind of stuff. So thank you to the big crew that were organising that. But also big thanks to Jason Enos and John Barry Williams, who without the assistance of a laptop managed to organise all those crazy nerds and all our lists and getting everything done. So yeah, just big props to those guys. Thank you very much for keeping things as smooth as possible, and I know the pain of running events myself, so I just wanted to big shout out to them and to everyone who got involved from the War Machine side. You made it a great event for us, so thank you very much. You're listening to the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. Welcome to episode 6 of the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. I'm Chris, your host, and I am here with the core presenters today. So we have Richard Beach.
Hi, guys.
James White.
Yo, hello.
And Toby Nathan in the sink.
Howdy.
So welcome back, guys. So what we'll do today, I'm just going to go through a bit of news and updates, a bit of an update of the events, and then the topic for today is going to be how you approach the meta when your current pair isn't working. So we'll crack back on. So the Man of War CID, there's been lots of talk on the other podcasts, so we'll just summarise it there. It's coming to an end. There's been lots of big steel middle bases, lots of people crying about the tankers being too good and, you know, coming up with ways that the world's ending. But I'm sure it will be fine, and we'll see once it finally comes out.
Yeah. Oh, there's the biggest buff in CID as well.
Which was?
The Victor got plus four rat even.
I did indeed. It did. So.
And it costs 34 points, isn't
Victor,
it?
So,
yep.
They knew. We also had announcements. So Steamroller 2018 is obviously coming up, so they're going to do a CID for that. It's only going to be 1 week. I hear you cry. But supposedly, there's only going to be 3 potential scenario changes and then a few minor tweaks, which I kind of don't know what you guys think, but I actually think that that's quite apt. I really love 2017. I mean, I will admit there's certain packs, certain scenarios are a bit more, you know, live, a bit more dead, but I think that adds to the way the game works, and I actually really like this pack, so I hope they don't change it too much.
Which three do you think they're going to change?
Breakdown. I think Breakdown's going to be considered too dead, and they're going to play with it. Dumbbell.
See, you call it by its proper name.
I also think what's really, really interesting is if it's all about the questions you ask. So if you poll the War Machine community and you say, what is your favourite scenario in the whole pack? And then if you poll them and say, what is your least favourite scenario in the whole pack? They will give you the exact same answer.
and the answer, army.
Yeah, 100%. And it's spread the net. So I think they'll change spread the net just slightly to make it less of what it is, but, you know, still the same kind of spread out scenario.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think they'll make them more live, or do you think they'll try and slow them down a bit? Because I quite like the fact that there's some that are fast and some that are slow and some that are in the middle.
I think, from my view, I think they seem to like the pace. Like, they want scenario to, when they originally put it out, they had the whole, this is there to force engagement. So I think they like the pace of it. I think if they're sticking to that mantra of forcing engagement and having something that's relevant, then they'll probably look at, maybe not the pace, but how the pace is achieved. So, like, where flags are, where zones are. So some of them where, I mean, one of the problems with spread than that is, especially with some players, you could just lose very quickly because they had, you know, two zones, two areas of the board that were easily scorable. And then usually that, like, far flag could be quite hotly contested and it could be, like, 3 points in the turn. So, yeah, it's a nightmare because, yeah, all your shit died if you had to contest. So, I think they might have more scoring elements, but in more scary areas of the board, which would be cool to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they might make it wider.
That is interesting. The wider questions. It's like, yeah, War Machine is still typically played in like that kind of middle 2 foot of board, especially with ambushing.
Yeah.
And if they make it wider, does ambushing just become like, for want of a better phrase, OP? Because you can't do anything about ambushing. They just spot select where they're going to come onto the board and shoot you. So it'd be interesting to see if they do that.
Yeah, I mean, just from my perspective, one of the reasons why I like the pack is because there is that variance. There is the sort of the dead scenarios, if you like, but there's also the really live ones. I think what they might try and do is to bring the ones, sort of bring them more to that even keel, because what I wouldn't want to happen is that we get to the point where every scenario is dead, and if you could just shove something in to touch multiple areas, then it just comes down to who can kill the most. But also there's, like, which is kind of, as James was alluding to, with spread the net, you do get some of those games where the opponent gets to go first, and then they've got a really fast army, and then they just jam you out. And it kind of, the reason why I love War Machine is that it's got that you're always trying to counterplay your opponent, and sometimes when all it is jam and you can't unjam yourself and that's how the game ends, you kind of feel that there wasn't much of a game to be had. So I think if they can kind of get that balance, which I think they're really close to now, and, you know, like we said, Mark III has been a fantastic it's in a fantastic place at the moment in the scenarios as well. So obviously, if you're interested in 2018, keep an eye out for that and get your feedback going. Right, any more on the CID? Or shall we move on?
Oh, they should definitely bring in that incorporeal models do not contest zones.
We had a debate on this. And I actually think that needs to stay. And people might call me biased because I'm a Grimkin player. it's 100%. And I actually think that the way that the Gremlin Swarms are used is as part of the way that army works. So if you stop contesting with the Swarms, and you can see this from, if anyone is able to just take the Swarms away from the Grimkin army, then the list falls apart pretty quickly. And you can see that when you actually play against it. But the Swarms themselves do very little bar a bit of fury management and contesting. I think the real egregious part of it is actually things like Haley 3, where you've got a model which is very, very high in stats. So it's basically immune to blast because of the focus immunity. It's very, very high. It's usually behind a cloud wall. It's actually, and this is more important, is you can put a model into the threat range of a Gremlin Swarm, and all they can do is back away with the Gremlin Swarm. If you put a model into the threat range of a Haley, that probably, especially if it's Baby Haley, will just take off the piece that you're threatening. And even when you do kill it, it gets removed and comes back, which again, the Gremlin Swarms can't. So I think if you need to kind of get rid of the Haleys as being a problem, not the Incorporeal, because you can plan for, you know, the Gremlin Swarms as part of, you know, taking on Grimkin as part of your list. What you can't plan for is the Death 18 behind a wall with focus and comes back anyway, and will kill you if you get anywhere near it anyway.
I'm fine with banning both.
Yeah. I was going to say, you are aware that, like, Gremlin Swarms have a whole list of rules that never get used, right? They've got, like, sabotage, mischief,
yeah,
all this stuff. Yeah, like they actually do stuff, but everyone just sticks them in the corner of a zone. Like they actually are models that can do stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. I have sabotaged something before. It's great fun. People get confused when you start reading the card to them. But yeah, no, I'm with you there. But as I said, I've seen games where I kind of feel like Gremlin Swarms are something you can plan for. The main frustration I've seen from most people, like, people get frustrated with Gremlin Swarms when you go, what was in your list? And they've just got no answer to it. You know, the only magical weapon they've got is their Warcaster. And that might be a faction problem. But you're there going, well, if you brought something, or you brought an Arc Node, or you brought Ayana and Holt, or a Mistspeaker, or, you know, Mistspeaker is not the... Does that give magical weapons? That gives magical weapons, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so every Horde faction can have a Mistspeaker. Every Warcaster faction nearly can have Ayana and Holt, and if not, you probably have Arc Nodes. So Incorporeal itself, not really a problem. It's that combination of people going, well, I can't... If I've got magical weapons, but I can't see through the clouds, I can see through the clouds, but I can't get it on something that can boost. And I can get through the clouds, I've got Incorporeal, I can get through the boost, but actually they've just got the focus to just ignore the damage anyway. That most ones where people have actually presented it to me where I'm going, yeah, I have no idea what you do there. And that's always been a Halo 3 problem, not a thing. So I think maybe it's like, because that would only affect, if they said that Warcaster units don't contest, I think you would see a big difference. So anyway, slight tangent there. Okay.
Otherwise known as the defense of the Gremlin Swarms.
Yes. Oh, and also everyone, most yeah. Horde factions can take Gremlin Swarms as well, is another side to it. Which is funny, because
Chris,
people
which...
complain about them, but you don't see them.
Chris, which factions are you playing at the moment?
Convergence. I have to play against them, but that, honestly, like, I'm playing with Convergence, and I actually think about Gremlin Swarms, like, right, what can I do to do that? Okay, Arcanodes, or Blasts, and can I make them magical? What answers do you have? Yes, Convergence do have answers to that, but I'm just saying, I think about it, whereas the Hades, you just, like, certain, like, when I play Kador, I'd literally just scratch my head and go, oh, you know what, I could kill those Gremlin Swarms with magical blasts off the, like, Behemoth or something like that, and I did that, but when it was the Hades, I was just like, I've not a fucking clue what to do.
Mm-hmm. I would argue that it's hardly, like, a big problem for you to take a TEP and a Opt-Effect Directive and then go, Gremlin Swarms are never a problem.
Oh, okay.
Convergence,
true, but if you see, people do say, when they're playing Grimkin, they say Convergence is a problem, and I actually think that's the bigger part of the problem. I was speaking to Pat once, and he said that's one of the problems, is that they just removed Gremlin Swarms, and at that point, the Grimkin army is there going, And if you made them not contest, then what would happen is basically every single army that plays against Grimkin would have that opportunity to be like, okay, they have to contest with their heavies in a zone before they've got the corpse train going and things like that. And then at that point, they're just like weak circle beasts and stuff like that. So that's what I mean. Like, if you take away the contesting, you're basically taking away their ability to play the scenario with that list. I mean, they've got the other theme list, obviously, but...
But doesn't this lead into the other topic, Chris? Like, how do you answer the meta, and what is the meta?
Yes.
Because one of the strongest things about Ghost Fleet and the Gremlin Swarms and all that kind of stuff is, because if you didn't have magical weapons, then it takes off your ability to engage with the scenario, and that's why it was so strong. And without that, then, you know, it's a much fairer game. So if people are teching for your ability to do something really mean, then it suddenly... is much less strong for them.
Ghost Fleet was slightly different. That was more the recursion, I think, than the weapons. But anyway, we will carry on. This is all great conversation for the topic a bit later. So to the other part of news, we have a new podcast coming out shortly, which is now going to be called The War Nouns of Renown, which was named by Mark Williams and Amsel von Spreckelsen. I hope I've not butchered that too badly. So,
well done,
Amsel and Mark. I will get in touch with you, and we'll have you both on an episode to represent your favorite caster and to do the ratings. But yeah, so hopefully we're going to get a first episode out covering Rich's favorite caster, Vlad II, as a bit of an example of how we're going to go. So hopefully that'll be probably the week after this, and then we'll run the podcast concurrently with this one every other week. And then we also had a Sheffield Outpost event, which was run by Mark Whittenstall, which was fantastic coverage by Mark. I've just got to put my hands up to Mark there. He was covering it. We had, albeit it got a bit of a crick in your neck if you wanted to watch the live feed, because he couldn't get the camera to go the right way up. But up-to-date results. I believe there were certain people there, James, you were wanting to mention that had headed up to Sheffield.
Yeah, it's just that obviously we had a Midlands guy in the final who unfortunately lost to James Sykes, so well done to Jacob Graham and getting that far. And then we had one of the two qualifiers was Chris Clare from the Midlands meta as well, so, you know, it's got good on the boys going up to Yorkshire and taking one of their spots.
Bit of a Midlands invasion there.
Yeah,
James, do you think it was being on the top table that threw him? Would you think, with it being a new experience for a Midlands player, he found that difficult?
Oh, that's shocking.
I love the bands.
If this was a TV series, it would cut and then, like, come back in 5 minutes, and then people would be sat there with, like, arm in a sling, like, black eye. And so, moving swiftly on.
Okay, talking of events, so we soon have the
second qualifier at Firestorm Games, which is coming up, and that's on the 3rd of March. So get in touch there. One of the things I will say is, and it's been fantastic, and I know we've said this with you guys before, is that a lot of these events are actually getting sold out now, which is just testament, because a lot of people got a bit down on Mark 3 and saying, you know, some areas die, but all these events are selling out, which means there must just be, and these aren't just the same 16 people roaming the country like some weird mercenaries or something. These are different people. This is lots of people on there. Also, the Welsh Masters has sold out and actually extended the tickets as well, I believe. And I think that's sold out as well. The extension is even sold out, which is just showing you how good War Machine is in the UK at the moment.
Yeah. So, absolutely huge. That how many do they get to in the end, because they're doing a cut to top eight, aren't they, after day one?
Yeah, I think 160.
Wow,
lots of fun there. So that's the Wales. We've got the qualifier. There's two on the same weekend, so if you, and we've got you both in the north and the south. So we've got the Cross Gaming Club and London Steamroller on the 17th of March, and we also have the Harlequins in Preston Steamroller on the 17th of March as well. So we've got you covered from both north and south, no excuses there. And then in the Midlands, just a bit of an update. We had a bit of a change on their qualifiers, so there's now going to be two over a weekend. And James, correct me if I've got these dates wrong, I've copied them in, but we've got the Leicester Fat Cats and the Walsall qualifier. So one is on the Saturday and one is on the Sunday on the 21st and 22nd of April.
Yeah, it's true. Don't ask me how that happened, but it has happened. They're going back to back. Obviously, don't think there'll be 16 people in both, so there should definitely be space if you're free that weekend and want to play in one of them.
Definitely, come along. Down there. And especially for those people in Sheffield and York and stuff like that. I just heard some remarks there from James about the Midland people invading. So there's a good opportunity for you to come down for a weekend and just smash a bunch of Midlanders and, you know, get your revenge. I love just stirring the pot. So unless there's anything else you guys want to cover on events, we'll crack on to today's topic.
No,
good. No, brilliant. Okay, so it's a bit of a shorter one, depending on how long the topic goes today. But if there is anything, and I'll just say it now before we get into the meat, if there is anything you guys want us to cover or want to go through, or any events you want us to go into some details with, do get in touch through all the forums and the Facebook and the Twitter. We love hearing from you guys, and obviously you're getting involved with the event, so obviously we want to hear you here on the podcast. So, if it's Toby or Reach, we're going to cover this one, the topic.
Yeah, sure.
So, Toby, if you wanna run away with it?
Well, I thought it might be better if we start with Rich, and then kind of if my topic kind of follows on from that a bit.
Sure. So, I've been involved with War Machine for a couple of years. Last couple of months, haven't been playing a huge amount. Been the little time I've had, I've been playing into things like this and WCC committee and things like that. But starting now to be able to play again, and so building a two-list pair. So I started with what I was playing last year, and yeah, going on from that. And there's a few things that have struck me on it in terms of, you know, taking for matter. I think the first one is just actually the speed of change. I feel is really noticeable now. So, you know, previously, I mean, rewind to last year, I needed a Crick's answer for Ghost Fleet and Host, and I needed a Hades 3 answer-ish. I mean, this is pre-theme, so it was on the radars, but it wasn't too bad. So, felt like, okay, you had a list of things to deal with. And now coming back to it and starting to think about the game capacitively again, it's really interesting because it feels like every week there's something else coming out with CID. And I think it's a great thing to do, but it's the game's overall, like CID, and it's changing its dynamic.
What do you think caused that, Rich?
Well, I think it's a mix of things. I think actually game balance is in a much better place. So we do have a flow whereby if you rewind to Mark 2, there are a couple of lists that I'd consider to be game theory solved. So it's like, it doesn't matter what you bring, I will bring this because this is optimal. And that's what it is. So Veil 2, you know, Ruins of War, Hades 2, etc. Like, the game was pretty much solved. And now there isn't those outliers. There were a few at the beginning of Mark 3 that have been brought in. So what that means is because there's a much closer much closer range of lists, in my opinion. We've got this back and forth, and there's only two or three lists that I look at, like, you know, they seem to be something maybe PP should look at, possibly. But yeah, it just feels like factions have a lot more options, and the game's more open. So because of that, people can experiment and pose questions and reply in a time period that's a lot quicker, and usually within faction, and crucially not really looking for a release as well. And I think the last kind of piece of that puzzle was the Mistspeaker for Hordes, which I think you guys were talking about beforehand. But yeah, with that in play, I think most factions have most answers now, would be my view on it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mistspeaker is a great point. I think James had some thoughts on that. But I think what they did with him is where they gave him the ability to give it to anyone. So he used to have the guidance, which was only friendly faction, and then they took away the faction bit. And so now he can be taken anywhere. But one of my favourite changes to all the theme forces was the one unit and one solo from Mercs or Minions, because I really feel that does enable this kind of dramatic, drastic change in the environment. Because what you're doing there is you're taking a piece to answer or to solve a problem, and often that problem changes and you need to be very kind of targeted. So rather than having kind of like a catch-all, well, sometimes you do take a piece, do you know, that's a catch-all if those major problems in the meta can be answered by other pieces in your list. But a lot of the time people are bringing in a piece to answer that specific question. So the Mistspeaker, I think, is really good because A, it gives magical weapons, but also it's letting you see through cloud walls. So kind of just so versatile, and it's a cloud itself, and he's a solo. So he's just a really, really good piece. But I wonder if he'll be as good.
Yeah, I tried to kill him the other day. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's really good. His cloud is if you try and kill him in melee, his cloud is -2 to everything. Like, he's just a really, really solid piece. But I wonder what I'd be quite curious to know and quite interested to see what's going to change to see the Mistspeaker drop out.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you were, and I think there's a wider topic here on, you know, if you get to the stage where some of these, you know, minion merc options are quote-unquote needed, then does that say something about the game? I think we've got some really popular options at the minute whereby this is a good tech piece. But overall, it feels like these pieces are, and this is kind of my input into today, really, so what you guys think on it. Feels like maybe you need to stop thinking of, I need an answer for this specific list, I just need these general answers, which is something we've touched on. But now I'm in a stage of actually building lists for it. It's really tricky. I'm finding it quite difficult, really, to come up with a pair. Work through that pair?
Yep. Just going back to that point, I think James had a really good kind of way of breaking it down. What did you say, James, before when we were talking? And you were saying, like, the first thing you should look at is...
Yeah. So, I mean, when you come up against a list and you say, right, it beats you, and your first reaction should always be, with your list, can I play the way I'm playing my list differently? Can I change what I did to defeat what's on the table? Because often, that's what you need to do. You could present something different, you could sit back for a turn and wait out a feat, you can do options. There are always things you can do differently on a table to try and maximise your chance of playing into a bad matchup. The second thing...
Dice don't matter.
Yeah, exactly. and if that doesn't work, the next option should be tinkering with your list. And that would be like, for instance, taking out Eilish and bringing in a Mistspeaker, because, you know, you no longer want the Puppet Master, it's no longer as valuable. Honestly, I played Eilish for about a month or 2 months, and people aren't taking negative upkeeps that much at the moment. It's not really
the debuff casters, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not seeing them. Eilish wasn't doing anything, really. Mistspeaker, there's cloud walls everywhere, there's stealth everywhere. It's really, really useful right now. Magical attacks, brilliant. So you look at that. If that doesn't work, the next option is, can I change to a different caster? Maybe you've got a caster with Mage Sight, maybe you've got, you know, something that answers different questions, can I change caster? And then if all that doesn't work, maybe consider changing faction, because your faction might not have the answers, although I don't think any factions can't answer the meta at the moment. I think you're having problems with Kador earlier. You're speaking.
Yeah, it's just coming back to Kador. And just for the record, I'm not at this stage of saying that it is or isn't, but it's just interesting looking at the stuff that's struggling. You've got kind of Denny 2 incorporeal jacks being thrown at you. You've got obviously the Cloud Wars with Colgrimmar and with Haley 3. You've got incorporeal models contesting and being a prick, like Gremlin Swarms, things like that. And all of the quote-unquote unfair stuff has typically been Kador's biggest challenge, because it's Kador's a pretty fair faction. We come across the table and we all smash your face in. So, yeah, it's just interesting to see a view on Kador and how would you approach list building in that respect.
I mean, just to feed on what James was saying there as well, I think we have this joke, and I sorry for interrupting with the hashtag dice don't matter, but we have that joke in our local meta where you get people at the end of the game and they go, oh, I lost because I didn't hit that six, or they passed, you know, three tough techs, or all these kind of things where dice is the reason for the loss. And I think that when, and anyone who used to listen to Murder of Crows has listened to me go on about dice and things like that a lot before, but I think one of the things that stops people understanding what's going on is when they focus on the dice. So the dice are the thing that you can't control. The things, as James said, the first step is to understand what you could have done differently. So if I think the way to understand this is to actually play more games. So before you actually go down any of those routes, is to actually get the sort of 10 games in. If you can, some people can't do that, or, you know, get a good few games in, get at least, you know, 4 or 5 games in. Maybe if you can, just, you know, smash your face into the same guy and just say, look, I just want to play this again. Now that I've seen that, you know, how you assassinate me, or play on a different scenario, or you change these things up, understand, actually know from experience how that matchup goes before you change anything, because it could be that you were just on a bad, you know, bad scenario against, and you didn't understand what they were preparing to do. And it's actually, if you stopped them doing something 3 turns earlier, you never would have got to that point where you needed to roll the 6 and that kind of thing. So,
I was going to say, to jump something practical, so maybe finish off that point and I'll throw something to mix afterwards.
Yeah, it was just basically that, like not just blaming the dice though, we have local players that blame the list. Like, if a list loses a matchup, immediately it gets swapped for another net list they found, and it's always the list's fault. Why isn't this winning games? And we have players that have 3 or 4 factions that lose a game and they switch faction. And your first two things should always be: can I play this differently? Will I learn? If I get more experience, will I have a way around this? And your second thing should always be: can I make the smallest change possible? Once you've tried everything.
Totally agree. I think you've got to be honest with yourself, otherwise it's not useful. Because if you're just saying, oh, they're dice, then you're not going to learn anything. If it's always an external factor that you had absolutely no influence on, then you'll never get there. So you need to be kind of honest with yourself. Was it that you played badly? Or was it that actually your list isn't suited to play against X or Y? Or was it that you dropped the wrong list? I think to really learn, you've got to look at the mistakes you made, and otherwise it's just a pointless exercise.
Yeah. Also, definitely.
Sorry, did you want to jump in, Rich?
On a point, if anyone's listening to this and has struggled with lists or armies, whatever it is, one of the things in the Northwest that we'll always recommend to people starting a game, and even people who've been playing for a while but just haven't found the stride with it, is just stop changing lists every week, because you won't move on if every week it's a new list or a new caster or a new faction. And that's not just at a table, it's like dojoing. If you're playing mercs but you really want to play cricks, and then you're building cricks lists just for the hell of it and stuff, you know, just I think actually there's a lot to be said for just building up some experience, and we'll come back to that. So I was going to ask you guys, we talked about some theory on this, but maybe Chris, you finish your point, let's actually talk through if anyone's got a pairing that they're building and kind of what they've been through with it so far and why. That'd be quite interesting to cover.
Go on to that pairing. What I was saying before was the when people, and I see this locally sometimes as well, and you see those events, not an event set, like when you just pick up games, is if you get to a club, if you've only brought one list, then you see sometimes some people like change their list and they like play so they get an advantage. And you then get people go, oh, they just changed their list to beat me. See that as an opportunity, because there's an Orion list, which I'll go into in a moment, which I played at BonesCon. And I am very inexperienced with Convergence again. I'm just throwing stuff down to see how it works. And I dropped it into what what possibly on paper could be like one of the worst matchups. It was like anti-guns, anti-drag in there. There was no knockdown. There was immunity to lightning. All the things that normally I would be like, all guns blazing. And at that point, I was like, okay, well, I'm obviously not just going to go, ugh, you know, it's terrible. Ugh, I lost this chicken. It's awful. And you start looking at your list differently. You start by being forced into that corner. You always say, you know, cornered animal and that kind of thing is at its, you know, fiercest. If you play in those awful matchups, you start going, right, can I throw away pieces that normally would be doing loads? Because in this scenario, it's not going to do what it's meant to do. So how else can I use it? And you'll actually get much, much better as a player by trying to play out those best, those awful matchups. So don't see them as learning opportunities, not just, I mean, they're not going to learn anything because all they're going to know is, well, my list that I've designed to beat you, whereas you might actually learn more from your list and become a better player because of it. Sorry, James, you were going to say...
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, firstly, I think what you said there is definitely true. I know that in Mark II, I played a lot of Runes of War, and because of the way the foot theme's built, you can't change anything. So when you come into a problem matchup, you're not thinking, how can I change the list? And you're not thinking, should I change to a different caster because it's obvious that Runes of War is amazing? You're thinking, how can I use the pieces that I've got? You know, can I just jam you with Rune Shapers for a turn and wait out a feat? Can I do this? Can I do something different? What are my options? And you find that often lists are a lot more flexible and capable of winning matchups that you thought you had no shot in because you're forced to think outside the box and use the tools that you have.
Yeah. And it also just, sorry, we'll jump back onto the main topic, but it also stops the thing that I used to hear a lot when you listen to like the podcast where they say that they get, with D&C, you get forced to play a list, and they get forced to play a list into a bad matchup. And it's like, well, if that's the case, if your opponent thinks that, oh, you know, they've got to drop this, I'm going to pick my best choice into it, and this is the first time in the tournament at a final that you're coming across this matchup, and it's the first time you've ever played this, of course you're not going to do well because you've never had a chance to, you know, think. You're having to think through everything at the start. Whereas if you've actually locally just been like, you know what, you know, Dave's decided to drop the perfect counter to me, I'll see what I can do. And that means that you now might have the edge on the person in that final and might actually pull it out on the day because you do something unexpected.
Exactly. What I will say is we were talking about building lists and, like, getting reps in. And, like, are you three all going to Welsh Masters?
Yep.
I'm going to be armpit deep in nappies, I think.
That's fair enough. But what I would say is we are in February. Welsh Masters is 3 months away. And I reckon you're probably all thinking about your lists for that time already.
Yep.
You probably got your pairing locked in. You're trying to get reps in already.
I'm thinking about my faction right now. But yeah.
Was that game at BonesCon against Jonas? Was that? Is it made you reconsider Scorn with the Denny team?
No, I fucking. Do you know what? I did it the wrong way. I had an assassination with that. I misread Carapace in that game. I thought the bonus was against the plus four bonus was against ranged and magic, and it's not, just against ranged. Yeah, rusty. That it would have changed things a bit, but anyway, it was cool. Okay. It was a cool game. Left only on one. How many boxes? One box, three boxes, something like that. It was cool. I liked it. It's a cool game.
Go on, Chris.
Oh, I was just going to say, so just getting back into the topic there. So I'm kind of leading off from James saying, so those lists that you've got, we've just covered that we know the meta's constantly fluctuating, but we kind of gather that there's incorporeal and cards out there, and we've got to decide some lists if we're going to get some reps in. So how is it that you guys will actually, and also to add to the confusion, Welsh is a three list event, but it is D&C zero. So technically you could just put Mickey Mouse and his friends in the third list and never actually play them. So how are you guys taking to approach that? I mean, is that something to consider? Does the three list over the two list change up how you approach it?
I feel with three lists, you have to have more overlap because if you try and have, like, I've got these two things and then there's one list to deal with that problem and my other two lists won't be able to deal with that problem at all, I think against a savvy player, they'll be able to know what you're dropping and it puts them in a driving seat. So I think having things that are tailored but some core strengths that are across the game sorry, across all your lists that can play into most stuff, or two, I'd like to have two out of three things that can deal with like magical weapon with incorporeal, etc. But just as coming,
interesting.
Yeah, because yeah,
I tend to come at it from another aspect. So I'll have my core list, and then I'll build a list that I think supports the matchups. You know that you. The main list is going to struggle into, which is, you know, pretty standard. And then my third list will be something stupid that's going to try and bully them into my primary list.
Okay, so the thing that you just drop. Yeah, that makes sense.
Ragnar double gargantuan. But you never
So something that they're going to think, oh, fuck, I have to play this into. And, I mean, it takes a bit of thought. But, for instance, so my pair at the moment would be Colgrimmar and... probably Madrak if I can not fall asleep while playing him. But hopefully
do try.
And then the third list might be something like a gargantuan list or Kalandra. So it's looking for the weakness that they'll like. If you've got Cold Immune, then it's going to take Colgrimmar's assassination off the table. Whereas Kalandra will kill you just as well if she can knock you down. And I think. Like in the mirror, or do you know, against some Kador, do you know? I think that'll be really useful. So that's just a different approach rather than trying to cover as much.
Sure. Well, can we start with that? So I'm coming back to this. So assume that I'm a noob again, or don't give much abuse for being a noob, maybe. But if you take a two list pair, just talk through like in Mark III recently, like how have you approached putting this together? Where did you start? You know, what was the theory behind the first list and how has it changed? I mean, talk through that. So has anyone got any examples of stuff that they're building at the minute?
So if it's cool, guys, I'll jump in. So I'm playing Colgrimmar and I think in terms of deciding what you want to play, I think primarily, unless you're kind of uber competitive and don't get something more out of winning than kind of playing and enjoying the game, you want to play something that you enjoy. And hopefully those two can be the same. You can be very competitive and enjoy playing it. But Colgrimmar is just really different from a troll player's perspective. And I know lots of people, you know, try different factions to get something new. But she's very interesting and very different and allows trolls to play in a slightly different way. Because we've never really had that kind of denial before. It's always been denial through being really hard to kill. Whereas
boxes,
not being able to be charged really enters and kind of is this new play style that was really interesting. And also she's got a really ridiculous threat assassination to just kill you. And I realised that in playing trolls, what I'd found from playing in all the years I've been playing, and I think, I don't know if James, you'll agree, is that the control casters always just shaft you. Like they've got such a strong game into trolls, because a bit like Kador, you didn't usually have a massive amount of tricks and gimmicks. Like you've got some in your pocket, but if you played against a player who can control you, then that was really problematic. Go on, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think every troll player at some point has played into Scar 1 or Harby, and they haven't been able to threaten them from range. And so they've just kept going down to low health and just sit on zero every turn. And you just sit there and feel so helpless because they're basically playing a zero camp game where they know that you can't threaten them. And it's something that happens in trolls occasionally.
Yeah. And when I was looking at Colgrimmar, I was thinking about it at first in the CID and then kind of talking with the people I play with. And she's bonkers at killing those casters. So most War Machine casters, if they don't have some really ridiculous defensive tech, and actually she gets around most of it anyway, but she kills the Harbinger quite easily because her whole game is based around the Harbinger player managing how much they can martyr down to and still stay alive while kind of leveraging stupid solos and stuff to just grind you down and win on scenario. And Colgrimmar will kill her quite easily because the spray will get round the wall, the spray will get round her not being targetable by Sprells, because you just target the Devout and kill her. And she can't ever, you know, martyr, because she'll die. So it just takes Harbinger out of the game. So then you know who you're playing against Menoth, and it's probably Aemon, who will also die to her. Do you know, and against Hayley 2 and Hayley 3, like the game of the Invitational killed Hayley 3, and I'd played that before and just killed Hayley 3. Hayley 2 is just as squishy. Both the Dennys will die to her, and because it's a magical spray, it's going to ignore the stealth on all those models. It's going to not ignore incorporeal. So she just has this amazing answer to all those, you know, really, really difficult to answer traditionally lists, because they weren't going to play fair. And as soon as, and that forces the game that you're going to play, because they just have to avoid dying. Mm. And that means they can't be as influential. So then you're massively up. So the whole, go on, mate.
So I was going to say, did you build your list then? You just rattled off a load of stuff, and yeah, it's the boogeyman list that everyone's worried about. So you started with Colgrimmar because you wanted her to be fun. So you wanted to play a cast that was fun, and you like Colgrimmar, which makes a lot of sense to start with that. Yeah. And she's really strong. Like, did you already know that she's going to answer these things, or did you have to build your list around them? And if so, how did you decide what she's going to play? Because I guess that leads on to your off list, right?
So going back to the Colgrimmar question. So looking at playing her, and I know I've not really played her in the Storm of the North, which would be a much more infantry champion, infantry kind of base list with a few beasts. And there's the pod version, which is, you know, lots of beasts and Morgue, which is why you're playing the Power of Dunia. And so between
like
those
Arcanoid
two...
assassination with the pod
exactly,
thing.
Exactly. Right. So it goes back to how I want to play. And I think delivering beasts behind the cloud wall, heavies particularly, because you've got a whole list of power attacks. And I'll talk about, I was going to mention like in the evolution of the list, in how that's kind of affected it. But if you, so the cloud wall cuts out charge distances, so it allows you to play much closer to them. And then heavies, with all your power attacks and stuff, just enables you to be much more aggressive, to trample over infantry, to power attack throw, to power attack slam. So you having a more heavy build is preferable in the style of Colgrimmar that I want to play. Not that there aren't lots of different styles, but that was kind of what I started with. And then it's about looking at what is going to be, you know, what don't I want to play beasts and Colgrimmar into. And what I was finding was that derp turtles were killing me, which is really annoying. Sorry, the Siege Adamant Thrax was just really quite dominant. And also going wide, so people will play around the cloud wall by just going around it with fast-moving, hard-to-kill models. And then it forces me, because I've got a low model count, to kind of split. So then my off-list has to be able to kind of deal with those threats and still not get shot to pieces. So I think I was rambling a bit then.
So you started with like Colgrimmar, you built that. The bit I'm really interested in is like, did you start with the list being like, I'm going to design it, I'm going to play it in this theme to deal with these things? Or did you get it on the table and then start refining it? And where did you start the journey with the list building? Because I think everyone around in this podcast, anyone plays War Machine, will have an iPhone or an app, an Android phone, whatever it is, you know, War Room just full of lists. And I'll have ideas for them. And quite often I hear very, very specific things like, you can have like, I built this list that is super good into this particular list. So I've built this list that just crushes Denny Two Jacks. And I always look at me like, that's great. I think you're really going to struggle because you've got to work back to something that can play into anything else. And you can't just have a list that deals with one particular thing, because even then the list chicken's a nightmare. And on the flip side, I've seen people who have lists that are like, these things work really well together. And they haven't really thought about what that does and why. It's like more of a asking a question. So like where on that scale did you start with that? Like, did you have, asking another way, trying to be a bit more articulate, did you have a hypothesis on what your list was going to do and why it was going to be able to do that when you're building it?
So it's either going to kill their caster, essentially. And it does that by levering Colgrimmar's spray to kill them, or by getting a beast on their caster. And so it's all just about kind of working out the best way to facilitate that and keep Colgrimmar alive.
And did you play...
So I started off...
Oh, man, so interesting. Sorry, Toby, yeah, crack on.
Yeah, go on, mate. What were you going to ask?
I was just going to say, so you've outlined a list that's built effectively around assassination. You've got two assassination angles. You've got a spray assassination, which Madhu wants you to talk about, and then you've got I'm going to get a beast to you. So do you actually play with, obviously you're not going to be completely blind to other win conditions, but do you go into a game with, that's going to be my win condition until I think another one's better?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to come really far up the first turn, usually cast all my clouds, put myself in a position where I can be threatening. And if I can get the assassination, if they, because lots of people, like it's interesting, lots of people play on like an autopilot. So they'll do the same things they do every turn. You know, they'll cast all their spells, they'll do this, they'll do that, and then they put themselves down because they think they're safe. And if they do that, then you can kill them. But also, if people then clock on to the fact, if you've played them before and you've sprayed down their caster, then their game plan changes. And that's when you can adjust. And actually, Cold Grimmer and all the power attack stuff enables you to then play a pretty good scenario game. So if people are backing off because they want to try and go around you, or because they don't want to engage the beast behind the cloud wall, then you just don't play that game. You just win on scenario. And that's why there's some other pieces in there that are pretty good at doing that. So you've got the Northkin Shamans who can sit on a cloud, sit on a flag, put a cloud up and not be seen. You've got Maulers in the list because they can throw anything out of a zone if you need them to. And her sprays, you know, will mulch infantry. And she, also she can curse fate, and then the shamans can also spray lots of stuff down. So there's lots of little different avenues to play. So it starts off, if they leave themselves open, I'll try and kill them. And if they don't, then I'll push the scenario game, which actually tends to get them to overextend. And then you just try and kill them again, or win on scenario.
Were you like, when you were testing this, were you like validating it? So did you put this together, and then like, where did the list start? And you're talking about these specific pieces, and like, what was the journey to get to what the list is today? And it might be worth actually talking about where you started and what the list is today, because I don't know what it is. Is it the Beast One?
So, originally the list was Cold Grimmer, Rune Bearer, Mulg, Double Earthborn, because I wanted a kind of stronger scenario presence, and I thought they'd be really strong in this current scenario pack with how the terrain is and all that kind of stuff. An Electro Troll, just so I could play it into Signar quite comfortably without dying to all the Electro Leaps. And I thought it would also force their Signar drop, because it had two Earthborns, the Storm Troll and her and Cold Grimmer, who'd all be immune to lightning. So it means that he or she, whoever I'm playing, you know, is forced off Nemo almost. And then there was a Winter Troll. And the Beast package, sorry, the Solos package is, it's varied a bit, but it's usually always two Shamans, Whelps, and now, except the Whelps have come now, and now it's a, yeah, anyway, so the original version was Whelps, two Shamans, Minimum Stone, and the Cold Elder, I think that was the list. Oh yeah, and the Swamp Gobbler's Bellow crew. So it's just lots of clouds to protect Cold Grimmer on the turns that she wants to cast spells rather than making clouds. Because I found that the games that I died was when I got greedy and overextended and left Cold Grimmer with an avenue to die. And actually, if you do it right, she can be really far forward and not die. And what I was finding was that... I had the Thralg in there as well, sorry, because I was thinking behind the clouds, like the Thralg is just an interesting piece, because I can maybe get them either onto, you know, a caster at some point because they got better and it's got stealth now, and I can hide it somewhat, and also it can go in and it can disrupt Jax, because I'm really looking for Cold Grimmer to play into kind of War Machine. So the Thralg is quite a good piece to have, you know, to try and leverage an advantage in that matchup. It'll also just kill kind of random infantry, and it's a way of removing buffs from stuff, which I don't have otherwise. Quite quickly, I realised that the Thralg just dies. In this list, there's not enough stuff to distract your opponent from it. So if it's going to be a kind of problem for them, they'll just kill it. So the Thralg got cut, and I put in the Mistspeaker, because he's another cloud, and he also allows me to see through cloud walls, and is another source of magic. And he came in there. And the Earthborn eventually got cut to go to a second Mauler, because I was finding that the Earthborns, although they're a really good kind of scenario piece, because they can be really hard to remove, and you can actually get them outside the stone if you can get them near terrain, and they're still really tough and have a lot of boxes, but they just don't do what the Mauler does, whereas the Mauler is just better for smashing stuff up. And actually, two Earthborns is maybe a bit much. You probably only need one in this list anyway. And whereas, yeah, so I've been playing with the extra Mauler for a bit, and that's much better. And going back to the assassination element, is that I was looking, I played a game against Jake, who just won SmogCon, so well done, Jake. And I killed his Haley 3, like on the second turn, trampled into the cloud, killed Haley 3, which is likely to happen. But someone raised the point that maybe that it's not likely to happen. So I had a look at the dice math and thought, ooh, do I really want to be hedging my game on like a 68% assassination? And actually, I do, but what can I do to make that more reliable? So then I worked in the Dunia Knot, who also give me a couple of rerolls for a couple of key things. So like if I really need the Mauler to throw something out, I can Puppet Master, and then I get a reroll on the throw. Or, do you know, the reroll on Colgrimmar to freeze things. Or, do you know, there's lots of different things. I'm still not convinced they're worth it. I think Eilish might be better moving forward, and that's something I'll try. But that's where the list's going at the moment, is that the kind of it's the support that's varying now, rather than the kind business pieces.
And how many, like, when you're making those changes, like, what's your approach to testing? Like, how many games do you play and that sort of thing? Like, when do you let yourself make a change? Because I think something locally, to give a context to this, that I've actually, ever since I've been playing, like, some more player list and then down at club the next week with a completely different list, or the same list with some substantial changes. And you're like, not sure you've got everything you need to from that one game. And also, you know, it wasn't even a planned matchup. It was like we just turned up at club night and played a game, and you see kind of list changing fairly regularly and stuff going in and out. So what's your approach to actually making changes with a list?
Well, like James was saying, I think you just need to change as little as possible, because I think there's always a solution to something. It's either like if there is something that you really can't answer in a matchup, then you need to kind of neutralize it with the least, you know, resources given up. And so when I'm making changes to a list, what I'll do is I'll change one thing and just try and be aware of how that change feels in the list. And also if there's kind of play changes that I can make. And also just like you were saying, that you were rusty and that you'd lost your reps. And I think that's so important. Like, I really realise when I've not been playing regularly, like, I just make mistakes. So I either overinvest or underinvest, or just make errors in terms of kind of activation and things like that. And that's very easy to cloud your judgment about what's actually going on. But so what I find better is if you just make a few little changes, but be honest with yourself. So make sure that you're holding yourself accountable for things that didn't go well, and trying to think about ways in which you could play better to resolve them, but also evolve the list. Because it might be that rather than trying to tweak this really good list that you've got to meet this other new challenge, that's something that your off list can answer. And that's kind of, that leads into the second bit of, you know, how do you develop the off list?
Yes, definitely. So how do you then? So, because it sounds like you kind of nailed all the boogeymen in that, or most of the boogeymen when you're going through what that list plays into. So, like, when do you decide something can't play into it? Because I think it's very rare in Mark 3, and be interested, Chris and James, what you're thinking. It's very rare to have something that is an auto loss now. It's, you know, certain Mark 2, there are a couple of things where you're like, well, good job I turned up to this one. it feels like you've always got an option, especially with scenarios being live. So when do you call it a day and go, you know what, this just, yeah, I want to build something around this?
I think you've always got a game, but what you want to do is give yourself the best game that you can have. So although your main list might be good into, you know, four of the five most common matchups, your off list can then cover that fifth one, you know, so you feel confident to most of yours. It just depends, I guess. I feel like, and I think I'm guilty of this, and this is something that I need to work on, I become very reliant on playing the same thing, and it's something that I'm comfortable with. I think I'm actually not very good at picking the right drop, and that's something that I realise I have to work on, because what I often do is get too stuck in my own head, and I don't try and take the perspective of the person I'm playing. Because often what I try and do, and I don't know if it was, I think Chris maybe mentioned this, is I'll ask the person afterwards, I'll say, what was your thinking behind that drop? And often what people say is vastly different to what I was thinking, because I was too fixated on, X and Y, and actually they were thinking, ooh, this will obviously how this will play out. But in terms of, what do I look at in terms of the second list?
Yeah,
there's some things which are just difficult for her. And I think in my head it's Derp Turtles, it's the Siege Animan tracks and kind of Siege End and the things that can go wide, because that's going to turn me round from my cloud wall. And what I say to my clubmates often, when we played a game, it's like that. I liked this and I liked that what you did, blah, blah, blah. I would have, in terms of what would have made me worry, is if you'd have flanked me.
Yeah.
Because although it's quite easy for her to form a wall of clouds with the terrain along the middle of the kind of terrain of the board, she can't go sideways. And if she's doing that, then it's really difficult. So kind of anything that's going to be able to flank me hard, anything with a battle engine that's really fast, because that's quite independent. And if it's a jack or a beast, then I can, throw it out of the control range, or lots of different kind of things to answer them. But the battle engines, they're not going to be pushed. They've often got kind of an annoying ranged threat as well as a melee threat. So things like the war wagon, or the gun carriage, or the seed adamantrax, things that have got kind of a dual threat on them, is really going to give me list problems. And so I need something to answer them.
Does that also play into ambushing stuff as well? So it's kind of the same. You can like the troll mirror. You've got immune to cold and bears.
Yeah, so the troll mirror is going to be difficult, because as soon as stuff are immune to cold, then it really takes her off the table. And so I'm probably looking to play Madrak into that. Because Madrak answers, so the stuff that's going to charge, so things that can't boost are really going to struggle with the champions. They're just going to fail. And things that rely on the kind of charge attack and impact attacking, he has to be very careful how he does that. Because either he charges, say there's two champs up front and then three behind. If he tries to impact attack the champs behind, even if he hits, which he might do because he's got the boosted impact attack roll from the rules, I can spread the damage around so it fails, and then his charge has failed. And if he just charges the front champ, then I'll try and tough him. And if he doesn't, he dies. And then the three champs behind will charge in and deal with him. So there's little different tactics. So it goes back to what James was saying about, is there different things that which you could do to approach the game? And that's kind of placement and the strategies that you're going to try and employ to answer the questions that are being posed to you. So it's kind of like, what would I drop into those kind of lists? And that needs to be kind of high def. And the champions are just such a good question anyway. And they make other people uncomfortable. I think people tend to focus on the Madrak list.
Definitely.
It's kind of a bit of a distraction.
So going back to the meta, which is where we started, it was we talked about how the game feels like it's no longer in you need to tech for this specific list. There's a range of things that you've rattled off, but actually you can probably start breaking them down into specific things anyway. So types of lists or specific problems like incorporeal, stealth, cloud wars, etc. Did that hold true when you built that pair? Were you building a generalist answer to do things, or were you looking at specific pairs all the time? So asking another way, were you saying, I need something to deal with infantry, and infantry might present itself in these factions lists, or were you going, I need something to deal with Scourge and Denny One Scourge or whatever it is?
I think I wanted to play a caster that had a really good tool set, and then it's kind of utilizing that tool set to answer things. So I think when you're playing a list that has a trick, I think part of playing that list well is realizing the things that people will drop into it and then thinking about those matchups. I don't tend to think too much about, and I don't think it's the most common approach, is I think much more about my list than about the opponent's list. So I need to use the tools that I have put into the list to answer the problems that I'm going to see. And it just so happens that there's quite a lot of good tools in the list, and it has a lot of kind of answers and solutions to things. But I really think it's more about concentrating on the list that you've got, that you've built, and it being able to have game into a lot of stuff. And if you come up against something unusual, then you need to really think about, is your second list need to have a good game into this odd thing that you found, or is it a case of you need to tweak your main list to try and be able to play it better, or do you need to learn how to play against this, or do you know any variation of those?
Just when you're mentioning what you choose and things like that, one of the conversations we had, which has kind of really resonated with me, I think I've mentioned it previously, but it's quite a pertinent point here, that we had with Will Pagani, in the way that they designed the game, is he said that one of the things that people need to do is to stop trying to, and I'll paraphrase the way stop trying to undo a screw with a hammer and to, you know, knock a nail in with a spanner. Is that, like, I think what he sees a lot is that we're making these lists, we're playing these lists, they're losing, and then we're wondering why they're losing, and we're not taking the right tools for what we're answering. So in a way, you kind of have to understand why is it that you're playing the game? Is it that you're wanting to play competitively and win, or is it that you say you want to play, but really, some scraping going on in their background, but really we want to play the thing that we love. It might be a model we love, or a rule we love, or something we think is really cool and synergistic, but actually that's not the thing that, once you've played it enough and you've played a bunch of and you've got experience into it, and you kind of go, oh, what is it that, why isn't it I'm not winning, when actually it could be that in your faction there is something else there. And it might be, you know, we always laugh about Grail in Circle. It's like, I guarantee you, at some point with the meta cycle, Grail was probably, I'm pretty sure he was winning some games in America. There was some team tournaments or something, and Grail was smashing people. And it's, you know, people need to assess their faction, need to assess what's there, need to look at everything when they're going through. Now, it might be that, yes, something is really, you know, really bad, and it's only actually specifically good in a certain circumstance. But when you're doing that kind of second list and you're looking for those answers, don't just kind of go, oh, well, the two things that I see in the meta are this, because there's a good chance that there's a tool somewhere, and it might have a really awful model, and they might be really old, or no one ever plays them, but it could be that they're actually the answer that you're looking for.
So perfect segue. Oh. I was in a very similar situation to Toby, and I was playing Colgrimmar, and I started out as a Beast Brick, and then over time I drifted to playing Green Storm of the North. So I was looking at the situation in a different way and saying, actually, I want to play double infantry. I think SR-17 really supports double infantry lists. I don't think Beast Bricks are as good, even though obviously Toby's had some success. And I've still got the assassination, because do you know that she can threaten 21 inches on an assassination? Like, even without an arc node?
Yeah, she's quite monstrous with the charge and then the vanish and then the spray.
Yeah, like that's absolutely insane. And she can do that. And then, as you said, like, she is incredibly good as an assassination caster against War Machine. And so if I build the list purely to War Machine, I can build my second list to Hordes. And that's meant that I'm now playing Madrak with a Skinner. So when you mention, like, you know, a model that no one's taking, or no one's even looked at, like, if you are building a Horde-specific matchup with Madrak, why aren't you looking at a Skinner that can be defense 21 against beasts? You know, sit with Prowl. It's disgusting. Like, what a good model if you're going to break the factions down the middle.
It's really interesting to hear people start the same caster, go in completely different directions, and have very valid reasons for it.
Was it the Bears that took you into Storm of the North? Sorry, Rich.
No.
I actually, like, I played a lot of Gristle 2 last year. Like, a lot of Gristle 2. And it started out as I played as a Beast Brick, and she was wicked. And then I slowly moved into Band of Heroes, because this sounds terrible, but, like, if you're trying to assassinate someone, what you need them to do, in my view, is overcommit. Trolls don't have an assassination that can just say, I'm going to kill you every time. You know, I mean, we don't have a Nemo free. We don't have a, I am just going to gun you down. So you always need them to overcommit. And if you want someone to overcommit, you basically, you put a big attrition army in front of them. And you know, at some point in the game, they're going to reach too far because trolls generally attrition well. So I want to stick a lot of troops on the board. And I want to say, deal with this problem. And at some point, you're going to make a mistake. And you're going to camp one. And I am going to smash you. Because you need them to think about something else other than the assassination. Because if you let them, if you stick an arc node and you stick Colgrimmar in front of them, I think they're going to go, ah, that's scary. I'm going to camp four every turn or two every turn, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the ability to change tact, isn't it? It's shift gears and try and go for another kind of victory, which is essential. Because what you're hoping that people do is they'll try and play in a certain way, and if they're behind you, if you've already clocked that that's what they're going to do, and you've already switched to trying to kind of beat them through scenario or something or attrition instead of just trying to kill them, but they're just trying to furiously defend themselves, and you've got no intention of going for it, so you're going to start utilizing your resources to achieve the different victory, then you're in such a better position. Andy Garrard's got a really interesting Glacier King build with her.
I've got the Glacier King in there as well at the moment.
Yeah, I want to try that because that seems really strong, but that's a completely different build almost, well, for me anyway. But that just seems really strong. But I think she's just really good. I think that's what enables all these different play styles, because she's just that good.
Yeah, and if I can troll Dojo just for a moment. The reason that I actually chose her in that theme is the stone. Like, it sounds really weird, but I think the stone in many ways dedicates what you want to take. So it often, like I find there's a lack of, I don't like the lack of synergy in taking non-cold beasts and then a cold stone. And you need the cold stone for an assassination attempt. You know, she's not going to assassinate very well if you've got a normal stone in there.
Yeah, but, yeah. Excuse the maths, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so I want to build synergy around the stone. I don't like... And so if I was going to build a beast brick, I would probably go something like Double Brawler, so they had the 15-inch threat every turn, if that makes sense. So
the problem with the Brawler one is that she needs to be in front of them to enable the 15-inch threat.
Walk, do it, vanish back. maybe. No, I think you're right.
But then there's no clouds, though, you see. James, you need all the clouds, all clouds, all the time.
Yeah, and then this is what you said. And also, like, as you said, like, bears just make people play narrow. And against a cloud wall, that's really good. Anyway, I think we should stop troll dojoing because I'm probably boring the guys.
That, interestingly, that was the direction I was going to go. I was speaking with Andy because the people who went wide and went round the cloud wall can't do that if they're going to get ambushed by bears. So it's and that kind of follows into the kind of initial conversation about the meta. So if people start to build lists to counter your list, you can actually evolve and play your list differently or put elements in it to counter, you know, that arms race. I think it's a really interesting kind of thought exercise to try and outthink the things that will cause you problems.
Yeah.
I think the other part to it as well, just to add into that you mentioned there, is to when you're talking to... We always say because obviously not all of us can make, you know, can have like 5 games a week, 10 games a week, you know, constantly, you know, play, and we've, you know, not everyone's got every single faction with every single caster in their meta. So the chances are that you're not going to be able to, you know, get that amount of information that you need about your lists and about that first list, which will then help you pivot and make your second list into the meta. But what you can do, and what I would say is actually a better idea, is to actually speak to those people locally. It might not be in your specific meta. It might be just in, you know, for example, regional, different regions. Understand, like, what is they're playing, why it's that, what they're playing is the more important part. What is it they're seeing? Why is it they're seeing that? And why is it they're taking it? Because the unfortunate thing is if we jump straight onto the internet, the internet is a great tool, but it's also an awful tool, because you're going to see people who shout down something that's actually a really good idea for the things that you're likely to see,
And vice versa, you'll have someone that's going, oh, this is the latest troll list is, you know, all Fire Eaters, but it actually turns out that in England, the biggest thing you're likely to see in the Nationals is immune to fire army or something like that. You know, it's so you need to kind of try and get in contact with those people locally,
yeah.
You know, local groups, local players, meet those people that you meet at national events. You know, it's a social game. Have a chat with them, ask them what they're playing and why they're playing it,
yeah.
And then build the rapport that way. And you'll actually probably find that that will help you keep ahead of the meta, because one thing you'll notice is that we are a slightly tribal bunch. We love to help our own factions, but not other people for some strange reason. So we'll, you know, if you can get in touch with those locally, that'll help you keep ahead of the meta, and it'll keep you ahead of the relevant meta as well. Not just because you can, you know, smash people locally, but if you go to a national event and it turns out everywhere but where you were was playing a certain thing, and you just, you know, tunnel vision locally, you're just going to get smashed when you go elsewhere. So
indeed, that was really useful, guys. Thanks for that. That was cool. So I'm gonna go away and think about some lists, and maybe next time come on with a pair and then talk through with you guys, see what you think of it.
Yeah,
sweet.
Not sure on which faction yet. I'm still umming and ahhing between Kador and Scorn. They're both good.
Yeah, and just to give a quick example for those listening there, that regarding the troll, although that was specifically about trolls, I'm basically having the exact same journey as Toby has with my convergence. Whereas instead of Colgrimmar, it's Orion, and at the moment I'm looking at the other options based around the experience I'm having with Orion. So I'm just putting all my experience into Orion to therefore understand the weaknesses, as Toby did. So it's like, although we're completely separate factions, completely separate strengths of caster, list, the focus, the same process will work. So it will work whatever faction you're using. If you pick that that main thing that you want to do, the thing you think will work, and use that as a pivot, and then base that around what you're seeing. So just in case you think that's only for troll people, it's not. It works for any faction.
Yeah, I think if you just pick a list and play it, then you'll leave yourself always with an option, because I think it's a bit cliched and has been said lots, but if you know what you're playing and what your list can do, and you know the way to approach certain situations, then you've got a reasonable chance into most games anyway.
And talk to people as well. Talk to other people like who play the faction. Like I've like a lot of this Colgrimmar conversation is something that me and Toby have discussed online multiple times, you know, since the start of the year. And it's just about going, well, I've had this experience, and just you're just getting more of a picture, because you can't play, you know, 600 games a year unless you're Mark. Went and like for the rest of us mere mortals, you just need to pull experience, and you need to. I mean, I'll be honest, like even if I wanted to netlist trolls at the moment, I couldn't, because no one's cracked it. So we're all just working it all out and just taking little bits and just, you know, work it along.
Sorry, Chris, crack on. Yeah, come on.
I was just going to say, I actually think there isn't going to be, and this is the strength of Mark III, I don't think there are going to be netlists. I think the closest thing we've had to a netlist has been things like Ghost Fleet. But even the supposed Haley 3, which is going to be a netlist, I've heard people debating what's the best way to build Haley 3. And I think it's because there's so many things that are relevant and there's so many things that are diverse that you can't netlist, because if you netlist, you become too focused in one area and you become too counterable. So I actually think the important part is, like you said, is to get a discussion with people that you understand, but understand why they're doing it. Don't just go, that's the netlist, I'll play that, because you don't know why it's being played. You need to pick what people are playing, great, but actually you can talk to them, actually discuss with them why they're playing it. That's going to be the bit that you'll take from it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's kind of that. There's two things to mention, I think. One, when you're asking for feedback, I think a lot of people will talk about the tech. I have this thing, it does this. If you have the Coldstone, it's +2. And I found speaking to other players, it's a lot more useful for me anyway to say, okay, you know, the example, how do you use it in a scenario? And then you start getting these conversations. It's like, well, yeah, you have to think about the matchup differently. So you have to lead with this piece, which feels really backwards, and then have that for late game, because this is an issue that usually happens and you can engineer this. So as an example, it's like when I was playing Haley 2, it was like over one last year, teched it a lot. And it was really weird, because you always want your horses threatening, your Ulans threatening the opponent. And what I found was after a couple of the goes of playing it, you had to kind of keep them out of the game. until a certain point, and then they had to come forward to threaten. And it was a real matchup, matchup knowledge and how to play the game. I think when you're asking for feedback, I think too often people run off and go, I've got this list, it's amazing, into this, go and play it. And actually saying, I've got this list, this is how I play it, and these are the specific scenarios, can be quite useful. I think it's something else I've noticed after playing locally, playing in tournaments, is as a community, I don't think we're very good at losing. And maybe this is both of these points is something for another topic, just on feedback and learning. But like, I have people come up to me, and I'm sure I've done this as well. And if you lose a game, like, quite often there's the reason. You know, I very rarely hear people go, you know, he beat me, yeah, or she just smashed me with this. I did X, Y, and Z. I think it was wrong, and they just beat me. Instead, it's like I was winning, and then this happened, or I was really, really close, and you know, if I had 5 minutes more. So I just think we're not actually very good at losing, and I think there's a lot of missed opportunities around it. And even when we do talk about it, it's that the 60% didn't go off, or you know, he got this crit 7 that was really important. It's that type of stuff. This isn't a rant or a moan or criticism of anyone, because I think it's just nature of the game and the fact it's competitive and no one wants to lose. But I think probably we could lose better. Maybe. What do you guys think?
You're not less of a man if you lost to a better man, is what you're saying. Like, and it's true. Like there's everyone has to have an excuse, but at the end of the day, we all put hundreds of hours into this game every year, and we're all really, really good at this game. And sometimes you just lose to someone who, you know, outfought you once, and you'll get better and you'll beat them next time. And just, you know, pat them on the back, say congratulations, and there wasn't an excuse. They just played a better game.
Yeah. I mean, just to give an example of this, so there's two examples I need to bring up. First one is first round of Bones Connor mentioned then. I obviously lost that game, but Matt, my opponent at the time, he read my list better. He understood the combinations better. He read me better because he understood where I was going to drop and what I dropped. And therefore, he was able to drop a better list into what he thought I would, which straight away, he's already better than me because he's been able to understand that. Then when we were playing, so when we're playing, we're actually like, although I'm behind and stuff, I'm doing stuff and I'm trying to claw back, but he does beat me, and he beats me, you know, quite soundly. He takes away, he understands the key piece, which in this case was the Axiom. So he makes sure that he never loses any of the pieces he takes for the Axiom. And then he does get a turn where, regardless of dice, he takes down the Axiom. Okay, he kills the Axiom, and that was kind of my key piece. So for me, what I try to do now is that, yes, you can sit there and go, oh, I rolled this, or he rolled this, or whatever. But what I try to understand is, where was it? And from that game, I understood that if I could keep that Axiom alive, that would be what would keep me in the game. You know, so that was the point where he was on the defensive until the Axiom was dead. So I still had two of the heavies I could have used to actually throw into him. And at that point, you know, I should have thrown them away if that would have kept me better in the game. And me not recognizing that, and Matt recognizing that was the key to the victory first, meant that he won. You know, so all these other factors come in, but really at the end of the day, he did beat me on all these separate things. The dice just facilitate that, but as I said, it was actually the list. It was at list selection that he actually got way ahead, and then it just continued to press that advantage going forward. The second one is if people don't want to play you. Now, I was at BonesCon, and you've heard me mention this story with Michael Dick before, and I was there, and he said he wanted to play me, but for some reason, and I mean, you were there with me, weren't you, Rich? You know, you were hanging around most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
Did you notice, like, he only came over and asked me if I could play a game when I was busy, or if I was, like, going to bed or something. You know, he said I'd
yeah, like that something. Time at breakfast. Yeah,
you know, like he'd mentioned that I was, you know, I'd said stuff on the podcast about playing a game, and he wanted to play me a game. And I was like, that's fine, we'll have to play a game at some point. But he'd only ever asked me to play in the game when I couldn't do it. So I think he was just trying to dodge at that point, you know, something about.
Because he didn't ask you to play a game. He came here and said, "I'm taking your head. Come here."
I mean. I personally had a similar experience, like at England qualifiers last year. If you remember, I played against a certain Cador player, and when I beat him, he said I diced him. It was shocking behaviour.
It was awful. that guy and his niece, it was terrible. How? Yeah.
Cool.
On a slightly serious note, guys. Yeah. I think the problem with fixating on a very small end to a game is that you don't learn from all the other things that contributed to get the game to that point. And if you can actually, and it's quite difficult, take a step back, but think about all the things that caused that situation, you know, with events to happen, then you can learn a lot more from the game than if you just kind of like, the guy diced me, blah, blah, blah. It's pointless. You're gonna become a much better player if you can take that step back and realise the mistakes or the part that you played in it.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool. That was a cool cast, guys. So brilliant. Back again in a couple of weeks, and we'll have some more goodness, I guess.
Thank you very much, guys, for listening to the episode. As I say, if you got any feedback, let us know. Post in the comments for the episode. Get in touch with us personally on the chat. If you've got any topics for us, because obviously we're just kind of winging this as we go along. We hope that you're enjoying it. Let us know and we'll try and bring them through. Keep another eye out as well for the other podcast. We'll get that out there hopefully next week. And obviously, thank you very much for listening and supporting us. We hope that you're all enjoying the show and the series. And we hope that so far, guys, you probably agree with me that everything's looking good for continuing on next year. So we'll have the UKIS 2019.
Yeah,
loads of stuff to go. But yeah, and thanks for the support as well. It's really cool. We were at Bones. See, Toby was preparing for husband duties, but just to say that I was really, really pleased that we all had people come up to us and just mention UKIS and thought it was a good thing to going on. So thank you very much for the feedback as well. It's exactly why we set that up. It wasn't, you know, something for us. It was, we feel everyone's passionate about the community. You want to play this game. Just really, really pleased to see it being well received. So thank you.
Yeah, just as well, there was a few people we mentioned this to. Our plan at the moment, obviously, if you have any feedback, let us know. But what our plan at the moment is to kind of borrowing from Privateer Press is that once the first series is over and we've got the winner out of the way and everything's happy, is we're going to do some form of like either live or some kind of Facebook feedback or something like that, where we're going to just get everyone involved and hopefully hash through some ideas for next year and get everything set up and things that people liked, didn't like. Tend to find it's easier to get through that when people are actually replying straight away. So keep an eye out for details on that as well. Right then. So, unless you guys have anything else, I will sign us out and we're all good.
Yeah. See you later, guys.
Okay. See you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.